I grew up going to church. Observed and heard, but hardly listened for close on 40 years. I told Estienne about 18 months ago that I've never really enjoyed coming to church. I don't enjoy church. I don't enjoy Sundays. That's for like 40 years. It was the first time I was honest with anyone. My mom brought a packet of sweets. If you laugh at my jokes just now, then I'll chuck you a sweet. Let me give me a moment. An incredible youth leader once explained me to my mom when I was 13. She said that I knew how to walk the fence between being a Christian and the world, or Christ and the world. She said I was actually very good at it. And when I was, so first of all, my mom, who's been an incredible role player in my life and has prayed for me since obviously I was born, and my mom's the kind of mother that would make sure that if I wasn't meant to watch the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I didn't go watch the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's the type of mother I've grown up with. So thank you, Mom. Okay. And then, this youth leader explained that I walked the fence. That's what I did. And I was quite good at it. And at the time, and I reckon for the next 40 years, I was actually quite proud of that. I thought it was an achievement. I thought it an ability to walk the fence. And which is obviously not factual, and it's not the truth, which I'm actually quite ashamed about. But anyway, I then got to high school, and when I got to high school, I was unplayable at the start. I was 13 or 14, I was incredibly naughty. We won't get into that, but I was mull. My headmaster called my parents in and described me as a youngster who, once in trouble, I'd be digging a hole, and I wouldn't stop. I'd just keep digging. I'd just double down and keep going. I was like, yeah. Let's see where this goes. Both of my siblings had drug addiction problems when I was young, about that era. I think it opened the door for lots of conflict in our home. And if anyone's been through addiction before, it can feel like hell on earth. And my sister is now a walking miracle. She went to rehabilitation once for heroin addiction many, 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 many years ago. And she's got two amazing kids. And so she's an absolute miracle. We got to remind her at some time, because she has walked away from God, but we'll get there at a later stage. In that time, early on in high school, when I was mull, God sent a young, I don't even know what it was. Back then, guys would just come in and you'd have, some Christian guy would pull in for 30 minutes a week. And he pulled in and he was incredible, and I just observed the soak. And I was naughty and mull, and I just checked this oak, and I thought, this oak is different and quite pleasant. And he did nothing except spend time with us, speak the truth, and I just sat there like amazed by this individual. And that was only for 30 minutes a week, so already I was like, sheesh, these guys who follow Christ can be different. Eh? There's something different about this individual. And then about a year later, I had another coach. His name was Ryan Kelly, I remember his name. He later became a youth pastor, and these two guys had a significant impact on my life. I think for the first time I had this like role model I looked up to and said, jeepers, check what these guys are doing with their lives. They're still like manly guys, but there's something different about them. And they were both kind and just passionate. At 15, my life was a mess, and God convicted me, and I was incredibly embarrassed about it, and I committed to sorting it out. I actually made him a promise, and I remember where I was at the time. My throat's... A few months later, though, when I was 15, I actually met my wife. Yeah. Sitting over there. That's the reason why I was telling you that. So I sorted my life out. I committed my life, and I landed up meeting Lauren. Incredible. Obviously the best thing that ever happened to me. I want some water. Yeah. You get a sweet, Lauren. But we had started, attending church, but we attended church together, but we both walked the fence, to be honest. We were quite good at it. After high school, my brother passed away when I was 18. He was 24. He was in a rehabilitation center, and it sounds like, that's quite hectic. It was for our family, but it was an absolute miracle. I believe that if he had continued to live and come out of rehabilitation center, that his life would have been absolute tatters and a mess, and there would have been absolute destruction. He died in a Christian rehabilitation center, and I believe it was actually, I believed it was God's call, God's decision, which I think is probably quite challenging for many people to understand. But in the time and what we were going through, you'd understand that. A few years later, my parents got divorced. But once again, God placed incredible people in my life. Lauren's parents have always been in my life since I was 15, and he also placed really good older Christian men who became really close friends. A guy called John Lee West, who is Jeff Kidwell's son-in-law, became a close friend and was incredibly important in my life. So even through my, junior school, high school, there was always God placing these individuals in my life just to keep me on the straight and narrow, because I don't know where I would have been without them. And then I've got a title here. I don't know why I've written. Yeah, there we go. I've written Big Life Decision. This is quite hectic. So family life had been a little bit messy up until then. Obviously, we had addiction. I'm going to put my pen down. I like to tick things off, and I'm playing with it. So yeah, I'm a teacher. That's fine. But I made a commitment. So this is the big decision. I made a commitment to a pact with myself to live a peaceful, quiet life in existence and to keep people at arm's length, except the lucky few. So that sounds good in theory, but in hindsight, I didn't choose a peaceful, quiet life, but rather a life of isolation. And this popped up in my daily reading this week. It's amazing how things pop up when you need to hear it. It goes like this. Throughout his ministry, Elijah was cut off from the rest of the society in solitude. There's a major difference between isolation and solitude. Isolation is bad for us as we are avoiding people and circumstances God has called us to, which causes us to be unwell, because it's not good to be alone. As God said, solitude, however, is where we are separated from people for a period so that we can be present with God in a more focused and less distracted way. I didn't want anyone else's issues. I'd had enough. And looking back, this impacted our decision to, I believe, not to have children. That one I don't usually cry about, so I don't know why. Not allow people into our lives and to sit in the periphery at church. Lauren and I lived our lives the next 20 odd years happily on the fence, as I explained earlier. But there was a slow shift. So Lauren and I have been happily married since 2008. We joined Josh's generation about 2012, but we continued to walk the fence. No was our standard response to anyone or anything, other than attending church on a Sunday and sitting at the back. I didn't want to let these people in or extend myself. Just remember my pact. Come for dinner? No. This is all in the church, eh? Can we use your home for home group, eh? We don't really. No ways, buddy. Will you come to come on a Wednesday night? No, we're not coming to come on a Wednesday night. Will you become members of the church? Nope, we're not signing anything on the dotted line. Committed. Said I'll tithe, I'll pack chairs away and clean toilets. I was happy to do that. Rugby, work, surfing, gardening, walking my dog, etc. is all more important. I'll really quickly tell you one or two funny stories about us at church. We would come to church as late as we possibly could to try and avoid people at the front saying hello and welcoming you, because I found that awkward. So I wanted to come in as late as possible. We'd slide in at the back, and the backest of the back row wouldn't be far back enough for us. So what we'd do is we'd grab two more chairs. So there's always the back of the back, and then there was us. But it never stuck around there long, because near as Esther and whoever was wrapping up, what we'd do is we'd pack those two chairs away and we'd duck out of here. To the point where, sometimes we'd stick around for coffee, I lie. But Lauren, I think she got introduced to one person here. They introduced themselves about 8 times to Lauren, saying, hi, who are you? How long have you been here? And Lauren would be like, 8 years, 9 years, 10 years. That's how distant we were, which was quite funny. Thanks, man. You get a sweet afterwards as well. I was lukewarm and I knew it. And I was convicted every single time someone preached. I read that verse about if you're lukewarm, you're going to get spat out. I'd be convicted and then I'd just carry on with my life and try and ignore it and do my thing. Anyway, the first time that we arrived here, we had our first pastor was Ross Gillespie. I call him Pastor One because he's Pastor Ross number one and then Pastor Ross number two. Ross Gillespie, which is Bernard's son, was very kind, very caring, and very patient with us. Our second one, Ross Lahana, was pushy and direct. But we loved them both. I don't think Ross was used to anyone saying no so bluntly as us. We were quite good at it. And we wouldn't hesitate. Anything, no. We had no issue. Pushy Ross was like a pit bull, and he pushed us to become members of Joshua Generation. We laughed and we declined. This is where Lauren comes in. We had been here for about, I don't know, I want to say 8 years or 10 years, I can't remember. We had been here a long time, and he said, you must become a member of the church. And we're like, bro, we come. Said, I told you, we tied, we packed chairs, and we clean toilets here. We don't need to be members here. We're not going to sign on a dotted line. Like, we're in. Anyway, so eventually we agreed to meet Ross and Margot as his wife. We met them at their home in Musenberg. Wanted to discuss becoming members, signing on the dotted line. Anyway, during the conversation, it came up that Lauren and I had never been baptized before, which shifted the focus completely. They're like, whoa, when they packed those other forms away and other stuff came out. Stop the bus, pump the brakes, here we go. I'd been in church for close on 40 years and never knew why people got baptized or felt like the need for anyone to get baptized. I thought that was for like other people, like not us. We chairs, tithing, toilets, that's it. Please, stay in your lane. I'm big on staying in my lane, not anything else. Also, don't ask me to pray in a small group. Sorry, I just had to remind you. I honestly felt that when they said, get into groups and pray, I felt like the pastor that was standing up here was having a lach at me and telling me to go and pray in a small group to see me how comfortable he could make me feel. So what I'd do is I would just walk out. And I'd leave Lauren, and eventually Lauren caught on to this. And then I'd go to the toilet, take my time, wash my hands, have a stretch, whatever, and I'd come back. And Lauren's told the whole group, no, we'll wait for him. And then I'd come back. Yeah. Sure. Anyway, I didn't know what this baptism thing was. I thought it was for everyone else. We don't need to do it. We carry on with our lives. And obviously, Ross pushed us. He said, no, bro, you need to get baptized. You believe you're a Christian, you better get baptized. So, felt convicted, and we agreed to get baptized in their pool in about 2021. At the time, I'd possibly never publicly acknowledged my faith, and looking back, I had no idea. that this action would set off a seismic shift in our walk with Jesus. Stuff started to happen. we didn't get baptized to see stuff happen. We just like, we must get baptized, and this starts to happen. So anyway, Lauren and I were good, and we didn't need much from anyone. That's the way with it we felt. Like, we didn't want to, just as I didn't want anyone else's issues, I didn't want to pass my issues on to anyone else. It was a big thing in our lives. Issues, anything. It was just us and those three people that we allowed to inner circle. Maybe it was two, but hey. But at a heart-changing moment when we met with Ross and Margot, Margot said to us, guys, maybe it's actually not about you. Maybe it's about the contribution that you can make to other people. Sure. I was convicted. I was actually quite embarrassed, to be honest. And my eyes were opened. Pastor three then slid in. So we've gone through two. We're now on the third one, yeah. Estian slid in and continue where Ross had left off, encouraging and guiding us towards what God wanted from us. Next section's titled Prophecies. I can't remember the exact timing because I've taken some knocks from playing rugby. But people started to prophesy over us quite earlier in our walk with Joshua Generation. And they would come up to us quietly with prophetic words, but we're never sure what to do next. What do? Pray harder, high-five each other harder, or get in the car and we drive home and go, yeah, that was quite intense. And you'd think about it for a while and then it would disappear. But I quietly hoped that we could just continue to blend in and nobody noticed us. Come late, chairs in, get out, do our thing. But the prophecies then became more public and very accurate. That's a concern. One morning we're sitting right at the back there, further back than back. It must have been summer. I was actually thinking about it this morning. I know it was summer. because it would have been far back as you could possibly be, but it would have been near the doors because the doors would have been open, so I needed to remain cool. So there was lots of thoughts about where we sat at the back. Anyway, and Milani and her friend, Milani is a prophetess, and her friend called us out at the back. And she said, hey, you at the back there, bro, whatever. I said, yeah. It was weird because when people prophesied, I knew it, like it was coming. It was like in my spirit. And I was like, should we leave? I think I ducked out a few times because I could feel it coming. Anyway, Melania and her friends, they called us out at the back. She said that we had disqualified ourselves from what God wanted to do with us and how he wanted to use us. And I'd never, ever told anyone my pact. I never anyone said to anyone, listen, yeah, I'd made this commitment that I'm going to keep everyone's arms linked and everyone out. And she called us out on it. And she was 100% correct. She said that we believed the lies the devil had told us and that it was rubbish. Sure. Couldn't have had a more accurate prophecy. She also stated that I'd be a sweeper in the church for elders. She used some hockey analogy that I didn't quite understand. But it was semi-aggressive, so I don't know, I liked it. We then received some more prophetic words telling us that we needed to get up and start living again. And it was often about, you have been sleeping, resting for a long time, and that time is now over. It happened a few more times. God was publicly calling us out, and there was nowhere to hide anymore, unfortunately. We'd often leave looking at each other and saying, what now, what must we do? I said, by this point, Estienne had taken over as a lead of Joshua Generation, as explained, and his advice was really good. It wasn't pray harder, spend more time, do this, do that. He said, guys, just stop saying no and start saying yes. Quite wise. So in 2023, we started going to home group for the first time in 20 years. Yeah. In 2024, I reduced my club rugby involvement from 3 nights to 1 night a week, and we helped host a home group. Not lead a home group, host. Okay, Clive was our leader there. I knew that God wanted me to walk away from my club rugby completely, but as like an addict. The prophetic words shifted from stop hiding, stop being quiet, and contributing, to you've been called to lead people. Sure. I was still unsure and fearful. I was still hoping that we could slide back the back and everyone could just forget about us. That was the ideal. Out the back, in and out, been a beta, see you later. But then the one day, there's a few of these, but Lauren and I were in AV sitting over there and Luke Watson had come into the church and he was now preaching. That acts like a lion, rah. And Lauren and I and AV doing our thing, and there's like a plant here. We used to have this big fake plant. And for some reason, there was a storm, and that door was banging. It's never banged ever. It was banging in that service for whatever reason. So the guy's trying to preach. So I said, I'll go sort it out. So I let Lauren on the AV, even though I don't do much. Went out the back there. I had to sort it out. And while I had gone through, and I didn't want to draw too much attention to make a scene, so I thought, no, I'll just stay on that other side. But in my spirit, I also thought there's like something funky is going to happen here. So I just stayed there, pulled the door closed, held onto the door. It wasn't rattling, doing my thing. This is good enough. Anyway, my wife, Lauren, over there, sends me a WhatsApp message. Yerkes in the congregation. I'm behind that door, and Lauren's WhatsApping me. She says, no, this guy wants you. He wants to chat to you. Like, anyway, I then reappear through that door. I sit down there, and then this looks at me, says, come here. And anyway, he prophesied about leading and whatever the story was, but it was incredibly public, and there was actually nowhere to hide anymore, unfortunately. Then two things happened. So now we are... What are we hosting? We're hosting. We're not leading a home group then. This was last year, June. And there was this massive storm that was coming in to Cape Town. And so what they did is they'd given us the day off work the next day. They said, no, I'm a teacher. They said, no one can go to school because it's incredibly dangerous for anyone to go to school or work or whatever, there's big winds and tornadoes or hurricanes or whatever we get you. I don't know. They'd blown this thing way out of proportion. But I do the sport called surf ski paddling, and what you do is you like the wind. So I was quite excited. So I could go paddling on the Wednesday night, get to home group, and I still had the whole next day that would be free. So anyway, at about 4 o'clock, we do this downwind paddling thing. We started Fishhook and we head towards Miller's Point into the middle of the bay. It was blowing at like 27 knots, maybe gusting at 40. So it was lots of fun. And I chucked my buddy in the back. That's a separate story. He's 63. And don't worry, I'll look after you, Dave. And we headed out. And along the route, my rudder cable snapped. And yeah, and so it's now, I don't know, 4:45. In the middle of winter, Jim, my mom's looking at me with big eyes. 4:45, and we're in the ocean, and it's blowing at 40 knots. And yeah, it's getting dark. So yeah, this isn't ideal, eh? So my emergency rudder cable doesn't work. Dave's at the back, do my thing. And I carry a pouch with my phone on, and I'm connected to NSRI. Anyway, I signal for NSRI, and the NSRI phones, we said, Brood, have you tapped the thing correctly? I said, no. I said, I rudder cable snap. I said, I need you guys to come collect me. So anyway, they said, cool, we are on our way. So anyway, we parked in the water for another hour and 15 minutes in the middle of False Bay, in the water, dangling off our boat. We were calm. It was like the water was actually a miracle because the water was quite warm. And they arrived an hour and 15 minutes later. It was quite lekker. A rescue boat came and almost killed us, but it did. It almost hit us, pulled us in, and they also managed to save the boat, which I was quite pleased about. I then went home. I got to home group late that night, and I pulled in at home group, and I said, how's it, everyone? They're like, what happened? I said, no, we're in the water. And I said to Lauren, I ran a cable. Lauren's like, okay, cool, hug, your dinner's in the kitchen, lekker. And then obviously you go to bed, and you start to think about things. You're like, did the devil just try and kill me? Like the devil wants to kill me because maybe God like wants me to do stuff, so it's the devil's trying to kill me. Mate, what do I need to do? So anyway, cut a long story short. Then the articles start to come through in the press about this thing, and it starts out fairly accurately, and everyone who writes reads that article, and then they, I was going to say, bastardize the thing, and then embellish it, and the next one embellishes it. By the time the fifth or sixth article got, that was completely inaccurate. But I only waited till the end of the week before I gave all the articles across to Lauren to read. So anyway, I thought maybe the devil's trying to kill me. So here we go. That Sunday, though, the preacher was on Jonah and the whale. So I'd grown up in church for 40 years, and all I ever knew about Jonah and the whale was that Jonah was either swallowed by a whale or a fish. And I remember that was like a big debate in Sunday school. Was it a fish or was it a whale? And that's all I remember. And then he got spat out, and there's a little bit of a song about it. That's all I knew. 40 years, that's all I knew about Jonah and the whale. So I was like, oh, lekker. Except this time, I heard that Jonah was running away from God. And if you laugh, sure. that helps actually. You can do it. Yeah. So for the first time, I heard that what happened to Jonah, but he was running away from God, and. It was 100% clear to me that it wasn't the devil trying to kill me. It was God saying, Brew, if you don't do what I've told you to do, you're going to suffer the consequences. You've been running for so long. I've told you. Stop ducking out the back. Stop disappearing. Sure. It was like in black. It was like absolutely clear. It was in vivid colors. Anyway, that Wednesday, we had home group. And for the first time, our home group leader asked me to lead, and he said, can you lead? And the thing that we was going to lead on was Jonah and the whale. So I prepped this thing, and everyone came over to our house and I was raving about this thing. I couldn't believe it, and I'm explaining, but I didn't connect it to my story. I just spoke about Jonah and the whale. I told no one about Jonah and the whale in mine. But anyway, a few weeks ago when I gave my testimony, some people were in our home group when I led that evening, and they left, all Berna and Steph, and they said that they were actually having a bit of a laugh on the way home. They said they've never seen anyone get so excited about Jonah and the whale story. But yeah. And then something else happened. I was sitting in church and someone was preaching. And last year, during a service, someone was preaching about get up, get going, you have a role in the body, etc. It felt like someone flat-handed me in my chest. It was like, just wake up. So now what? So Lauren and I agreed that God was calling us for more, finally. We slow. And we wanted to be obedient, and for the first time, God, and we were willing to get off the fence and pick a team. Obviously, we wanted to pick team God, stop walking on the fence. And we needed to break my pact of allowing people into our lives. Stop coaching club rugby and being involved rugby for the first time in 23 years. We signed up for every church conference, Bible meeting, Bible study, etc. Actually got quite a funny one. It's not in here, but I don't know, it was like last year, the year before. The first time I get invited to some Bible study, we're going to start discussing the Sermon on the Mount. Okay, Sermon on the Mount didn't mean much to me, by the way. But it was the same night as coaching rugby. So I'm coached a breakdown. It's quite an aggressive little part of the game. And then I shoot across and I go to this Bible study in Brian's home. And then they're leading it. And in my mind, what I've just come from. And then I'm sitting in his house. I'm just like this. And I was like this. And I think he looked at me because I was nodding my head. And he says, do you have anything to say? I'm like, no, I've got nothing to say. And all I can remember is for 6 weeks, I think we got through six lines or something like that. And actually, all I can remember is the thing about meek, being meek. It stood out to me. So I was coming off this rugby field, and like meek to me was like the worst thing you could possibly call me. Do not call me meek. And how good it was. So I remember that. Thanks, Brian. So for the first time in my life, I'm enjoying going to church. Conference or a gathering on a Saturday feels like the only place in the world that we should be. If you told me not so long ago, on a Saturday you're going to go to church, I'll tell you, there's absolutely no way. We've got rugby, we've got everything else. In the last few years, I've prayed for peace and calm. My rugby aggression was no longer required. My friend, who always said that my teeth are the softest thing about me, told me a few months ago that I'd softened. Oh no. It's now affecting my coaching too, but it's in a good way. Lauren and I have realized that all we can bring is what we've got. We can be refined, but if I can't remember a Bible verse, if our picture on our wall is skewed at home group, if we don't have some deep insight on a topic, hey, doesn't matter. In closing, God has always had his hand on mine and our lives. He placed Christians in our path at key moments. He has been incredibly patient and generous with and towards us. God has a plan for our lives, and sometimes it's not what we want to or expect. We lead an incredible community group. Sure. Yes, Dave. Who have been incredible blessing on our lives. Sure. Love God, read the Bible, pray, serve, and keep saying yes. Thank you.